DW Africa Link.
Every whistle blown on the field hides the screams that never reach the stands. But being behind the medals and headlines, there is a story of resilience. Many of Kenya's female athletes are running a race they never signed up for, a race against gender-based violence. From the training grounds to the podium, these women face a silent, relentless opponent. It's time to shatter the silence, confront the injustices lurking in the shadows of their victories, and demand a safer, more just future for the women who inspire a nation. This is a conversation long overdue. Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Kenyan women dominated headlines at the 2024 Paris Olympics, winning three of the country's four gold medals and sweeping the New York City Marathon podium. Double Olympic champion Beatrice Chevet shattered the women's 5,000-meter record in 13 minutes, 24 seconds. Yes, that's how fast she is. Yet these victories are overshadowed by tragedies like the death of Ugandan Olympian Rebecca Cheptegei, who was set on fire by a former boyfriend. Gender-based violence is a growing concern in athletics, with young athletes, especially those aged 15 to 19, often targeted for financial, emotional, and sexual exploitation. The United Nations estimates a woman or a girl is killed by an intimate partner every 11 minutes, underscoring the urgent need for action. Rights groups are calling on the Kenyan government to protect female athletes. And today, we'll discuss this critical issue with the National Government Affirmative Action Fund NGAAF Director, Viridiana Wasike. And also joining the discussion is DW's correspondent, Andrew Wasike, who has extensively covered the plight of female athletes.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
I will start with you, Andrew Wasike, as our reporter on ground. You've covered numerous stories on this, and what strikes you most about the cases involving female athletes in Kenya?
I will say that what strikes me most is that I think it's the sheer resilience of these women, despite what we are seeing, because there's a trend in Kenya where there's a rise in gender-based violence. Women are being harassed by their spouses, mostly women. This case does not even affect men. You know, female athletes in Kenya often come from marginalized backgrounds, and their success stories should be about breaking barriers, you know, because most of them come from areas in Rift Valley. Instead, we are seeing these stories overshadowed by harassment, assault, and sadly, silence. You know, because no one is talking about it. If we don't report about it, no one is talking about it. So what hits me hardest, like you asked, Josie, is how systemic the problem is. It's not just one or two isolated cases. It's embedded in the very structures that are supposed to protect them. And that silence is what is being loud. And that's why maybe we're having this chat here today.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously we have Viridiana Wasike, who's here to shed more light on the plight of these female athletes. Viridiana, success and talent can make female runners targets for predatory men. We all know that. While also low levels of education and exposure to male coaches at a young age can leave them isolated and vulnerable. What should be done to prevent this?
Thank you so much for having me. Indeed, success and low levels of education for these athletes makes them very vulnerable. And this is what we learned from the engagement that we had with the athletes recently, especially after the death of Rebecca Cheptegei on Kenyan soil, where a cause of gender-based violence led to death of one of the most renowned athletes. And this, we began asking ourselves, what is this race that we're going to run beyond the track? Because when you look at the track, it's where we do our work. But then when we come back home, you find that the violence is perpetuated when we come back home. Exploitation over the money that they have gotten, or exploitation from the fact that during training, you do not have a lot. And this is what Andrew has said. The stories, the success stories should be about breaking barriers, not necessarily for us to come back and really talk about the deaths and the pain that these athletes go through, that their wealth has been snatched maybe by a husband or someone who they thought is the person they can count on. You find that now they've become the real victims. And what now we are doing, a critical element that we found out was the lack of awareness, where they can go and get these services, financial literacy, how they can be able to really now begin understanding how to utilize their monies, and also just a bit more on education. And government also coming strongly, because we partnered with Athletics Kenya, which is an association, but really government working with these associations together in order for that also, that strength of government to come in and ensuring that perpetrators are actually reported and action is taken against them. Strong policies around that.
Right. You know, as you're saying this, Viridiana, we also had a discussion on Africa Link. That was in 2021 when Agnes Tirop, I think she, that was the year, if I'm to remember very well. This was also said, government will do this. We have started this. We are going to do start awareness in Kenya. But then in 2022, then we also had Damari Smoothie. It still happened. And more recently, Rebecca Cheptegei in 2024. That's just last year. This also have really cast a harsh spotlight on the vulnerability of female athletes in Kenya. And, you know, we can't keep talking. I mean, action has to happen now. And these are some of the things that we really want to know from you. What is the government really doing? I know you mentioned government has done this and you've also started something, but what exactly needs to be done to stop this? And what systemic issues also contribute to this alarming trend? Have you really done a research to find out and what immediate actions are necessary to protect these athletes?
Now, jointly together with Athletics Kenya, as you know, after Agnes Tirop passed on, Athletics Kenya went ahead and had a sectorial engagement. And what they came up with was with the safeguarding policy just within Athletics Kenya. And now together now with the government of Kenya, what we are doing, we have the State Department for Gender and Affirmative Action. We have policies and now legal requirements to be able to ensure that we stop gender-based violence. But there's one thing that keep rearing again. You realize that sometimes when there is reporting, there is the legal frameworks that needs to go through. And that is one of the critical areas that we are trying to really fast track, because you find that is another aspect of justice, the delayed justice, and also the just to be able to clear the cases within the ministry, the legal channels. You find that sometimes it arises from the fact that, number one, I cannot be able to raise, or these female athletes cannot be able to raise maybe the legal fees. I'll give the story for one of the female athletes. Like, for instance, you find that the female athlete can, on the other hand, the husband is actually colluding with the lawyers and paying and doing that. So you find that the system of justice takes long. You find that this lady who had been defrauded by the husband on a lot of money and undergoing gender-based violence, but then the husband has colluded with the legal systems, and you find that it takes that long. On the other hand, you find that
maybe we've had a conversation as a family and I have withdrawn the case. And so long as I have withdrawn the case, the justice system cannot move forward. And then you find out tomorrow I'm even hurt worse. And that is now the cycle of perpetuation that we keep seeing, and we keep asking ourselves, how do we enhance or how do we make sure that it stops before it begins? And that is why we are driving a lot of awareness. The government has put aside, actually last year, the president gave $100 million to drive awareness on GBV. And that is what the female legislators are actually beginning this January, to really drive that aspect of awareness. But as NGAAF, as an institution, we are also looking to drive male engagement with the State Department for Gender and Affirmative Action, because these are mostly the perpetrators. So if we don't shift the norms, whatever they are used to, and have safe spaces where male, the male gender can actually have conversations and really address this matter, then we'll only be doing half the work, where we are only talking to women and are not talking to the men. So we are looking at a two-pronged approach. As the female legislators are running with the awareness, we are also drawing the male champions. And as you know, the athletic community is really full of male athletes, male champions. So we are also leveraging them as champions who can actually come back and say, no, we need to shift this issue of GBV. So that is the approach that we are trying to drive with. A lot of awareness, a lot of prevention, the safe houses, and it's going to take an all of us approach to be able to shift the societal norms, and to also now begin changing the way we solve our matters and we work around each other.
Right. Before I come to you, Andrew, just with you still, Viridiana, there's something that you mentioned that got me worried. You say that some of these athletes sometimes cannot even afford legal fees. And that's so worrying. I mean, this is a celebrity. This is an athlete for the country, for the nation, for the continent. What is the athletes' body, or if there is in Kenya, doing about this? Aren't there supposed to be funds that are always there to at least chip in and to assist these athletes when such things happen?
Actually, and those are the implementation that Athletics Kenya is doing through the safeguarding policy and also through the partnerships. Now, through the safeguarding policy and the partnerships with the AG's office, and also now with the Ministry of Sports, these are some of the areas that were actually very clear that the legal fees or the legal process is actually one of the areas that is a hindrance. And when you look, you're saying it's a celebrity. Yes, they are celebrities, but then these are also celebrities who are coming from a very humble background. They probably do not know how, they are not financially literate. They have been struggling, and they have started winning these titles when they are young. You find they're 18. By the time they're hitting their 30s, they're retiring. But now you see, during this period, they have not gone through financial literacy. They have not gone through awareness on how they can handle these matters. So you find that they jumped into the limelight and they have not even been able to effectively plan for their money, for some of these things that are coming, for their investments. And that was one of the critical issues that we picked actually through the sectorial engagements. And therefore, we had partners like Equity Bank, financial institutions that can actually even come and take them through financial literacy classes in the camps, for them to begin to appreciate what they need to start doing and how they need to start doing investments with their earnings.
Right. Now, Andrew, as someone who's been covering this, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, you've really covered extensively on each and every incident for DW. But from your experience when you were researching and doing these reports, what do you believe is the root cause of the persistent gender-based violence cases in Kenya, especially amongst the vulnerable groups like athletes?
I will say it's a mix of deeply ingrained cultural norms, and there is also a lack of accountability, if you ask me. And There's also failure to prioritize the safety for women because these cases are not isolated. They do happen. They are sort of like seasonal, you know. So for female athletes, there's also this power dynamic. You know how athletics works. You know, it involves coaches, sponsors, and even team managers who often wield so much control over their careers, especially because, like Vidiana said, most of them come from marginalized communities, from rural communities. So this creates an environment where exploitation will definitely thrive, and we have seen a lot of exploitation. And then there's stigma that comes from, you know, from that exploitation, because when we're talking about GBV, we are not just talking about the people who have been killed. We are talking about those who are suffering, those who report to Athletics Kenya, those who report to other institutions. So victims feel like they can't come forward because of shame or maybe fear of losing their careers, because like I mentioned, they work with coaches and sponsors, you know. These are like, they're everything to them. They are what makes their careers. So it's really heartbreaking, but also I would say it's a reflection of a broader societal issue that we have as Kenya, you know, where women's safety, and I'm sorry to say this, is undervalued, especially when it comes to athletics.
No, and what's the reason? Why do you think the women's value is undervalued in Kenya especially?
Yeah, because when it comes to men in sports, you will see them clearly treated differently. They will not be harassed in a way that, you know, I've been to Rift Valley. I've been there for, let's say, to Eldoret. I've been there for, let's say, 4 days. Staying there, I'm doing feature stories with women athletes, female athletes, and also men. You know, when we sit down with these athletes, we ask them personal questions. What are some of the challenges you are facing, you see? So they will tell me that men are treated differently. For us, people, our coaches, our sponsors, our team managers, even our spouses, they treat us just as female athletes, people who you can tell them this is the path to go. Even if they have another path, they are mandated to follow the path that their coaches, sponsors, or even spouses want. If you don't, then it becomes an issue. So that's why I say, yeah, I feel like they are undervalued.
Yeah, because when we look at this trend, is I hope and I pray what happened in 2024 will be the last. We do not want to see this trend continue, especially from one country. It just shows there is a big problem. And this is why we're having this podcast, to try and also unpack some of these root causes. But do you think there's been enough pressure from the public and policymakers to create lasting change?
Honestly speaking, Josie, I think not enough. I mean, we've seen some progress, right? Yeah, Vidiana was saying, there are public outcries when cases make headlines. Kenyans really, really talk about it. And like she was saying about policies and legal requirements set in place to stop GBV, you know, and there's always laws in place to protect such people. But the problem is enforcement. Enforcement is another story based on what I've seen while covering such issues. You know, they tend to react when there's a scandal, but rarely will they follow through with systemic reforms. The public also moves on too quickly after the outage. There's a saying in Kenya, they say Kenyans tend to forget very, very fast. You bring up another issue, which is very, very frustrating.
Right. Now, Virginia, from what Andrew was saying, I mean, I think, it's true. When something happens, it trends, it's all over in the media, it's making noise. And then something happens, it's forgotten. We don't know what is happening on ground. We are not in Kenya. Only you guys are in Kenya. But what more can be done to create an environment where female athletes feel safe and supported? You know, we need to talk about the benchmarks or timelines for evaluating the success of these initiatives that you mentioned when you started talking about what is happening. We also know, Viridiana, there is a report that you did, and it also dives into government plans to tackle gender-based violence. What are the most urgent solutions being proposed?
Now, the most urgent solutions that we can actually delve into and address this issue, the fight against gender-based violence, is actually what Andrew has said. That sustained engagement and sustained advocacy on this matter. Because when you look at it, the only time you find us doing heightened conversation on GBV is during the 16 days of activism, where we try and champion it. But prior to that, actually, like in Kenya, we had like 90 of femicide. That is when now we it became a heightened thing that we need to do. And for us to have any systemic change, we need to really have sustained conversation around this issue of gender-based violence, because it's robbing Kenya of its elite and of its champions who are actually representing Kenya abroad, representing Kenya on the global stage. And it's robbing families and even the economy itself. We are really seeing it's dragging down the economy, because when women are attacked and they cannot do anything, it becomes very difficult for them to be productive. And when men continue to do this, then they lack the assistance that the female gender can actually help. You now begin to see that the female athletes will now not want to do, not want to take up the sport, because it's now becoming dangerous. Should it be so? No. And that is why, together with Athletics Kenya, we are rallying partners together and ensuring that we are having these conversations. Even if, and that is why we are saying the race beyond the track, can we have the marathons? Kenya is known for inventing running, quote unquote. Can we have these conversations as we run and consistently have these conversations on ending GBV? Because the only solution that we felt, even when we were having these conversations on ground last November, December, was the fact that we were there and we were discussing. And the fact that they were being aware, and the fact that we had the county commissioners, we had the government agencies, we had Athletics Kenya, you'd find now that they're becoming aware, and they're becoming aware that there is repercussion of you hitting someone, of you harming a lady. There is that repercussion. But then again, there's also the societal norm, especially from the male gender, because when they assist a lady, they say you cannot go away without paying. So this paying business is where now it comes when I want a female athlete has seen an opportunity and wants to move further. The male athlete or the coach or someone else feels I helped you and you're not paying me, quote unquote, by being with me and all that. And they go into attack mode. So there's this culture of you have to pay that also perpetuates a lot of violence around women, where you look, it's either sexual gender-based violence or physical gender-based violence or emotional gender-based violence, where they are staying there because they are, it's quote unquote, the man is saying you have to pay. So there is that societal also shift that also the male gender has to look at the assistance that they are giving should not have the connotation of paying. And if I'm not able to pay, then you harm me, you attack me. I think these are the areas.
Right, right. Thank you so much, Andrew. And Viridiana Wasike, you are from the National Government Affirmative Action Fund, NGAA.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
At the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. In Rwanda, for example, women's soccer was first introduced in the country in 1994 as a way to help survivors cope with trauma. Today, Rwanda holds the African record for the number of female football players certified by FIFA. And with 54% of Rwanda's population under 19, there are growing opportunities for youth development through sport as well. However, questions remain over what more can be done to ensure respect for human rights in and around sports, and how to protect the rights of women and children who participate at all levels. Rwanda is therefore an ideal test case for how the worlds of sport and human rights could be more closely aligned, creating a model to inform the experiences of countries around the world. Food for thought. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. Your insights are invaluable. We encourage you to share your thoughts with us, but remember to follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabi. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.